Hi, this is Coleman Domingo, who plays Victor Strand on Fear the Walking Dead, and you're listening to the Walking Dead Underground Podcast.
Now your hosts, Cynic, Igri, and Ryan.
And you are listening to the Walking Dead Underground Podcast, and I'm your host, Cynic, and joining me, as always, my co-hosts, and both of them still suffering from large amounts of turkey hangover, Igri and Ryan. And on this week's show, the speculation is over. We finally get to discuss the big reveal on which cast member it will be crossing over for the Worlds Collide story arc next season on Fear the Walking Dead. We also get to review The King, The Widow, and Rick. And we here at the podcast want you all to know that we appreciate your continued support. Every download, every week means the world to us, and we hope you all had a great holiday. And we can also be proudly found on iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher Radio. So like, listen, subscribe. Most importantly, keep your clothes on at the dump. Before we start the episode, I want to take a few minutes and talk about the big reveal on Talking Dead last night. My man, Lenny James, is going to cross over and be the cast member on Fear the Walking Dead in the Great Worlds Collide debacle, I'm going to call it. So I got this 100% wrong. Ryan, as much as I love me some Morgan, do you feel they missed a huge opportunity here with it not being the obvious choice, our catchphrase, Spouting Ginger?
I was wondering, because I think everybody had it pinned as Abraham, so I'm wondering how much of that decision was made to mess with all the leaks and speculation that was coming out. I'm confused. Does that mean that Morgan will not be on, like, the regular Walking Dead, like he'll be Fear the Walking Dead and they're going to write him off the show? Like, is he just going to be, will he kind of be part of both seasons? Like, what happens? Did they explain that?
Yeah, it's a timeline problem, really, because Morgan does appear, disappear, reappear, disappear, and then reappear again. We don't know going into this whether we're going to see, you know, post-pilot when he finally decides to get off his ass after Rick leaves, crazy Morgan, but that doesn't make much sense, or whether it's going to be post the cheesemaker Morgan, where he's going to preach restraint, or is it going to be present day Morgan? IG, why Morgan? I mean, what do you think the time frame is going to be? Can you see them making like a 3 to 4 year time jump in Fear of the Walking Dead to line them up with regular classic Walking Dead? And if so, are we looking at a complete crossover maybe next season?
Well, I think they chose Morgan, you know, a couple of reasons. One, he's a much more popular character than Abraham. Abraham is very popular, just Morgan is more popular, so it gives a bigger draw. Second, I think you guys are absolutely right. The showrunners, Gimbel and all those guys, decided, ha ha, you think you have it right in Abraham? We're just going to turn and go the other direction. There's just no way they were going to let us have it that easily. And third, I think, honestly, they're not going to do a time jump that far. I think probably after Rick sees him, he's going to go on a travel and he's going to end up. So I don't think they're going to do a 3 to 4 year time jump. That's my opinion. It could go either direction, but that's where I think it's going. I think there's like a 3 year gap in there anyway, where we didn't see Morgan on Walking Dead at all. And I think he'll fit neatly in there.
Yeah, low winter's sun Morgan, where he goes for half a season and then gets canceled. Ryan, what do you think? Do you think they would be daring enough to try a 3 or 4 year time jump?
No, I think one of the things it has going for it is the time period that it takes place in. And, I think it makes sense as far as the timeline is concerned that Morgan did disappear for a while after we meet him in the first season. So it makes more sense and would line up well if they include Morgan. My thought, my question more is kind of practical. Do they kill him off, or do they find a way to write him off of this show, of the kind of flagship Walking Dead show, in order to allow him the time to be a regular? Because I can imagine it'd be difficult to be a regular on two shows at the same time. So does he get written off this show, which would really be kind of frustrating to me because he's one of my favorite characters, to get him, have him written off in order to allow him the time to actually to film, Fear the Walking Dead?
What I saw on the Twitter sphere, and this is just speculation, as I saw a lot of the other stars saying, we miss you already, I can't believe he's gone, and you're making me cry again. And so what it seems like to me is he's leaving completely the Walking Dead and going to Fear. Whether or not he's just going to roam back off into the wilderness as previous Morgans have done, or they're going to kill him off, that remains to be seen. But I think he's done with The Walking Dead.
Well, he's definitely underutilized in the classic show. I mean, he's one of how many regular season characters that he just kind of falls in line. He would be an all-star over there. He's sort of like Superman coming into Earth. You know, the yellow sun of Fear of the Walking Dead will probably turn him into a superhuman. My problem is it all depends on what timeline we find Morgan in, and it all depends on how they're going to use him. Post-pilot, Morgan was fairly worthless. I mean, he barely shot a gun. He didn't want to leave when Rick left. I just don't know which way they're going to go with it. Now, I've said before, and I'll say again for the sake of argument here, part of the problem with Fear of the Walking Dead is that they lack likable characters. And it would have worked because every other thread I see is Abraham coming back, even though he's dead, is Glenn coming back before they even announced this big spoiler. This would have been a chance to bring lip service to the fans a little bit, bring one of these guys back that everybody seems to miss so much, and also make the cast a little bit more likable, make the show a little more lighthearted, because there's not a lot of humor in Fear. I picked the show back up this season, and I like it a lot more than I used to, but there's a real likability problem with all the characters. I mean, I'll send you a Cynic shirt if you can convince me why I should like any of these people. Even though Victor Strand's one of my favorite characters written on TV, he's just not, he's not warm and cuddly. He's not a Glenn. You know, at the end of last season, and not to give any spoilers, but the whole cast is in peril. And I really didn't care which one of them lived or died as long as it wasn't Victor. So that's a real problem. And I think the fans have kind of, the majority of the fans, because if you look at the ratings, they're nowhere close. The majority of the fans have kind of shunned that show. And I think that, I'm kind of wondering, IG, do you think this is kind of a ploy to turn some of the classic Walking Dead fans back to Fear of the Walking Dead?
Yeah, it absolutely is just that. It's they're trying to get people, because I know Fear isn't doing anywhere near the numbers of The Walking Dead, and they need to try and convert some of those fans. They hoped that they would all just jump when they announced this show and they put it on. But the problem is it didn't have anything really compelling going on. I attempted to get in the first season and I was like, I'm not digging this much at all. It just seemed a lot of inner character backbiting and other problems going on. And I didn't like it. It wasn't intriguing. And now they're just trying to grasp at straws and see what can we get? What can we pull out of this? Because the show's doing well enough for them to want to keep it on the air, but it's not doing well enough to actually like profit and proceed. So they really need to throw something at it and hope it sticks. And I'm not sure this is it, because Morgan is intriguing. Morgan is a fun character, but Morgan isn't enough to start to pull the cast together. You need somebody like an Abraham or a Rick or even a Glenn that, you know, brings people together. And I'm not sure that Morgan is that type of character.
You know, I disagree only to the extent that I think I agree that as far as Morgan's character is not the guy to bring people together. But I think as far as the show is concerned, I don't know. I definitely see it as a cheap ploy, not a cheap ploy. I see it as a ploy to bring Walking Dead fans over. And, you know, if I'm going to watch Fear the Walking Dead based on a character from The Walking Dead, I think it would be Morgan, because it would give us a chance to see what happened to Morgan and where, how did he change? Does he, you know, what causes this, what causes him to become the Morgan that we know? And I think that would be an interesting to see happen. And we've seen him interact with characters before. And I think we're maybe used to the Morgan that he's become, which is a little more stoic, a little bit more solitary, but you know, it might be interesting to see him engage with that, with another cast, another group. So I think if I'm going to switch over based on a character, Morgan's just as good a character for me as anybody else. I just don't know that any character moving over is going to bring the ratings up. I think that fans, you know, kind of have made their minds up about Fear the Walking Dead. I know that it's gotten better. And for, you know, people that I know that watch it, people I know that don't, I don't think there's much that's going to get them on board, unless there was like a full on crossover where all the Fear of the Walking Dead characters meet all the, you know, flagship Walking Dead characters and they go on their own adventures together. I don't think it'll do much for the ratings, because I think people just have their mind set on the show, and Morgan will, I don't think he'll help all that much.
Maybe if we could have gotten like a Negan, an early Negan over there, that might have like really thrown some things off, and that would have drawn me to watch. seeing that, I mean, we've got enough flashback stuff with Morgan that I love Morgan. I love Lenny James, but that's just not enough to draw me into becoming a big Fear the Walking Dead fan.
Well, definitely let us know your thoughts over at Cynic Radio. We start the episode off with an exchange of correspondence from the Coalition membership. The plan is working. We're doing this. We're winning. IG, did you think that this opening was strong? I mean, did it have a very Civil War type vibe to you?
It did kind of feel like a Civil War thing. It was, you know, like writing home, you know, the battles have been fierce, but we're trudging forward. It was, you know, and I mean, in its own way, it kind of looked like email, since it was an electronic device that he took the message out from the microwave. I thought that was kind of humorous and weird all at the same time. But I did like that the story just kind of pushed they all had basically the same letter and were reading it. And you saw all the different characters looking at it. It was really kind of different. It's not something we'd seen in The Walking Dead before. And I really, really enjoyed it.
I mean, there was something really romantically poetic about letters that we lost the second everybody heard you got mail. And it kind of changed the way we all communicate forever. I love this opening. It reminded me of every war movie that I've ever watched. I loved the letters back and forth. And I love the fact that it was being narrated by the characters. But this was one of the few things that I absolutely loved the show for, and I wish they would do more of this going forward. Ryan, what'd you think?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked the opening because it allowed us to see how, because there's a question, like, how do they communicate with each other? You know, we sometimes don't get an idea of the scale or the distances between the different communities. So were they just going to set, you know, part of me is wondering, couldn't they have just sent people to either a rendezvous point, or could one person from, you know, Hilltop go to Alexandria and share the information? Like, you know, I wasn't sure how they were going to get information back and forth, but it was kind of cool to see them, you know, that's how they share it. They kind of had worked this out before. And also what I liked is that they also seem to have had, you know, a plan of action once the kind of plan A, you know, was set into place or set into effect, so that they had a plan after that, and that those plans then seem to have been kind of set into motion based on, you know, the first plan kind of working out, or the first set of plans working out. So I think it was really effective. It was also kind of, you had the emotional impact of, you know, both the victory and the defeat. And I really like the way that they, you know, they opened it. Sometimes, you know, they're hit or miss sometimes when they do these kind of more artistic moments and episodes, and I think this is definitely a hit.
They were reaching well above what they could as a show when they do stuff like that. They're, you know, and I think it would be lost on some people what they were trying to do, or what they were at least trying to manage to do. But I think this worked. I mean, Ryan, if we look at Some Guy, which was 2 weeks ago now, and it showed us the horrors of war, do you think this week's show showed us a little more of the consequences of war?
I guess so, but we saw the consequences of war. I think this is more the, you know, the human reaction to it, you know, how it affects you, and, you know, how, yeah, we live in a time where we have instant information. If something happens, you know, in Tokyo, we'll know within seconds of it happening that it happened. And all of a sudden they're in a situation where they're all in the same city, and, you know, now information travels much slower. So it almost does take you back to like a Civil War time where, you know, you had to wait for a letter to find out what happened to a loved one or what happened in a battle. It didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen in days. It didn't happen in weeks sometimes. So I think this almost like takes you back in time to a different time where information doesn't travel that quickly. And, you know, there's almost a part of you where, you know, something has happened, but you have to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait to find out the results. And you're probably going back and forth over what happens if A happens, and what happens if B happens, and what do I do? So you almost see the kind of human reaction to anticipating, you know, the news. So I think that, you know, really does work really well. Well,
we've been lacking the last couple of weeks a feel good episode. You know, usually they rip the Band-Aid off and then they give us ice cream afterwards in an episode or two to make us all feel better about what's just happened. We've yet to get that. And I was wondering if we were going to see that. And we start off with the letters and the spirit of hope. But then we start seeing, you know, Aaron show up at Hilltop, and we start seeing the monument that the Kingdomers are building to their lost loved ones. And it rang to me like a very 9/11 type scene too. After 9/11, everybody was posting monuments and memorials and missing posters all over the place. And it kind of reminded me of that type of vibe. There was no reconciliation with the fans. No, we're going to, you know, make this right. It was just, this is the situation now that everybody's in. It hurts. It sucks. But this is, you know, this is war. And there's no ice cream coming anytime soon. IG, we find out that Rick is indeed headed to hang out with the Garbage Pail Kids. Now, I know that you and I have both balked because of the way they dress and because of how it must smell over there and because of, mostly because of the way they talk. But now, does the inclusion of Naked Arts and Crafts sway your vote for residency at the dump?
I don't know. Naked Arts and Crafts does have a little bit of sway. However, considering they live in a dump, you know, quote unquote, that place smells like ass. So it really does kind of turn you a little bit. That was a little bit of a shocking scene to see, honestly. And it's I don't know if it's the first time we've seen basically a full naked ass on television, but it was like unexpected at the time. It does make you really realize why she was so adamant about getting that first wire cat back that they had taken. You know, obviously that's Jadis's craft. That's what she does. That's her release, you know? So maybe it is honestly their own fault that the Heapsters turned against them because they stole the cat that she spent all that time naked making. You know, it's, you gotta know what you're stealing from people when you steal things. I don't know. Naked Arts and Crafts, kind of leans me a little bit back toward the Heapsters.
I'm sure that dump probably smells like two garbage cans humping most of the time. It's just, it's got to smell terrible. And pre-apocalypse, Jadis must have never saw the Seinfeld episode about good naked and bad naked, you know? And I mean, Ryan, don't you feel that there's a little too many rusty edges to be wandering around the dump without clothes on?
Yeah, that was my thought initially. It was like, I thought, okay, that makes perfect sense for them. Of course they would have Naked Arts and Crafts, but I would be terrified of getting some kind of an infection. Like, you'd want every part of your body covered in armor when you're moving around there. So that's just didn't make any sense to me. But yeah, of course there would be Naked Arts and Crafts. Like, why would you think otherwise? So it made them more endearing, you know. And I like their language. I you know, I think I'm the one in the group that actually I don't mind the Garbage Pail Kids. I think it's kind of funny. But yeah, Naked Arts and Crafts was definitely made sense, but I would never, you know, yeah, I was just worried about some kind of infection or bacteria or something. It's disgusting.
Well, a couple of things with that. I mean, one, do you think maybe it's possible, you know, there are people that kind of have collected things. Do you think one of the things they collected is an unusually large stockpile of tetanus shots? You know, they could have that on lockdown. Yeah. You know, you can run into all the rusty nails you want and everything's fine. And the other thing I think they have is a continuous loop of that Office episode where Kevin just kind of talks in shorter words. Maybe that's what's going on. And they just decided they're going to live the Kevin lifestyle. And why use many word when few word do?
We cut to Jesus feeding the hostages turnips, and he gets stressed down by Maggie and old Uncle Gregory about giving away their food. I know the majority of the fan base hates him, but were you begrudgingly forced to side with the former leader of Hilltop on this one? I mean, he was making a lot of sense in the moment.
Yeah, he was making sense. I think every kind of in that situation, everybody's right. Like, Gregory's only out for himself, and he'll turn on anybody at any moment if it saves him. But he was right. I just, it's kind of that moral dilemma of what you do. Do you kill unarmed, you know, soldiers? You let them, leave them to die. If you let them go, do they go back to, you know, you can't let them build, you know, kind of join the ranks again. So she's in an impossible situation. And you know, yeah, you're right. I mean, Gregory's is correct in what he's telling her. It's just that, you know, the motives aren't necessarily pure.
IG, did Gregory remind you of that elderly drunken relative that kind of gets, has one too many at family reunions and gets a little too honest until somebody grabs him and leads him off to bed?
He could absolutely be that weird uncle that everybody has. But, you know, the funny thing is sometimes that weird uncle is absolutely right. About once every five Christmases, they show up and have just the right amount of wine, and they all of a sudden just know everything. And everybody's so used to the rest of the time when he knows nothing and is just spouting craziness that, you know, you cart him off at the same time regardless. And that's the thing. Nobody wanted to listen to him, and he was 100% right in that moment. It sucks because I hate Gregory. I love the character. I love how it's played. But he is someone who's played to be hated. And him being right is a problem.
The king is not receiving visitors. He told me to go, that he didn't have to do this anymore. But this is what I do. Ryan, what is it about the human psyche that causes us to seek out what's familiar after times of tragedy, even if they're no longer necessary?
That, you know, it's a great question. I'm not, like, kind of struggling to answer it, you know, kind of using, like, putting on my kind of pop psychology hat. I think that they needed Ezekiel and they needed the king to form their community. And once that was all destroyed, I think it's kind of, you have the choice of there's nothing, right? You realize it's all a facade. And then, you know, what's life? What's this world? What makes you better than the saviors? Or you try to fall back on what you know, and fall back on what is, what's safe. So I think that even though they're all, it's kind of like they all know the game, they know the charade, it's still comforting. It's their source of strength. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think this is going to be one of those kind of stories for Ezekiel where, you know, while he had to put on the mask and play the game and play the character, that's still who he is. He is a leader. And so they need to bring that out of him, and he's going to learn that it's kind of like he didn't need Shiva to be the leader he is. He, you know, it's a kind of common story. Like he's kind of been, everything's been taken away, but now the real person can show up and be the leader. And I think that for everybody, they need to stay as strong and keep things as kind of stable as possible while Ezekiel heals and becomes the leader that he should be. And whether it's still, you know, a leader, you know, playing, you know, pretending to be in a Ren Faire, or if he just is the real person, they still need him to stand up and kind of show them the way.
And that brings up a good point, IG. I mean, was Shiva his cape? Was it his invisible jet? That's a terrible analogy because I hated the invisible jet, but was it his invisible jet? Was it the source of King Ezekiel's power?
I don't know about that, but it was just another symbol. It was another thing that just made him feel legitimate or legitimized in what he was doing. The thing that's going to help the most, and it's just like you said, is we're going to need to, like Jerry did, return to at least a sense of normalcy until things become normal again. And that's what all of us do. I mean, we've all had tragedies, be they small or large, in our lives. And the thing that helps most of us, at least initially, is returning to our lives, returning to the things that we've done in the past, be it play video games or go back to work or something that reminds us that, you know, we're still here, we're still clicking, we got to do something. And I don't know that Shiva is his answer. I think it's really the respect of the people is his cape, the respect of the people and the fact that they follow him willingly, right? It's not a Negan type situation. These people have chosen to follow King Ezekiel. And if he doesn't pull out of his slump, it's really not going to do very well for the people of the kingdom, because they aren't going to follow anybody else that freely. They aren't going to just go, well, the king is gone, let's follow Jerry now. Even though Jerry'd be awesome to follow and they'd have cobbler nonstop, it's just not going to work. He just does not have that quality that King Ezekiel had. You need that. And once people have latched onto that, it's hard to replace. So I hope he pulls out. I hope everything works out. I'm 99% sure it will. I'm enjoying seeing that story start to evolve.
I'm a firm believer that I hope everybody pulls out because the world's way too overpopulated. It was nice to see. It was nice to see that Jerry had his battle axe back, but they definitely been knocked down a peg or two. The two of them, even before they showed Ezekiel, he's not receiving visitors. He's not coming to the door. I mean, he had the door locked, for Christ's sake. He's not coming out. He's in that auditorium and he's doing God knows what, you know, but there's probably a lot of self-loathing going on. IG Rick tries once again to convince the Trash Queen that working with him is the only option. And we find out what the pictures are now for. She promptly turns him down. What is it going to take to sway the Heapsters on this? And why are they so important to the new world? I mean, is he afraid they're going to be short on sanitation engineers when everything starts back up?
I think they're important just because of the numbers. They've got a bunch of them there. I mean, So, you know, getting a bunch of soldiers, regardless of how effective they are. I had an old first sergeant in the military used to say there's two types of soldiers on the battlefield, bullet throwers and bullet catchers, and both are effective. Well, you need somebody to catch some bullets then if they're not good soldiers the other way. And that's what they're good for at a minimum. That being said, you know, you need just pure numbers against the saviors, because, I mean, although they have them all trapped in right now, I have a feeling that's going to blow up in their face at some point. I don't know. I think this is an odd place to go to get soldiers.
Once again, maybe I'm missing the point, Ryan. I don't see the value in the Heapsters. I mean, other than they look like a German techno band and maybe they're musical. I mean, maybe they play Trash Cans like the Blue Man Group. What do you think the value is in the Heapsters?
I don't know. I hope that we find out, you know, I hope that there's a payoff that makes sense, because at this stage, it almost just seems like we need to write ourselves, you know, through episode 8. So let's fill this up with something, because it makes no sense, because they've already betrayed them once. You've got a situation where they have a fairly elaborate and well thought out plan that thus far, I mean, it's had its successes and failures, but the main part of this thing, which was to trap the saviors, you know, among a giant horde of zombies, has been a massive success. So why take this detour by himself to on the 50-50 at best chance of turning the Heapsters? With what value are they right now? They don't need right now at this stage. They don't need numbers, you know. Long term they do, but right now they're in a situation where they've even said in these letters that they're 2 days away from descending on the saviors and trying to put an end to it. So why? It just makes no sense that he would go there. So I really don't understand it. Again, it's 50-50. It's not like he sent, you know, it's one thing if you send, like, you know, send some tertiary character who we don't know their name out there to deal with them. But, you know, for Rick, the leader of this entire group, to go there after so much of the plan has worked out and they're so close to a possible major victory, it made no sense to me.
Maybe it's to try and them out of the battle more than anything else.
Well, I was thinking that too. Maybe it's misdirection. I mean, if you placate them long enough to finish this up, and then you can swing back around and kind of finish that as well and go deal with them. I mean, I love the back and forth between Rick. Shot you. No, you grazed me. If you shot me, I'd still be mad. I love that back and forth, by the way. But IG, it reminds me of football when a team's down and it's first or second and long, and they always try that stupid run play that never works.
On the draw.
Yeah, and now it's like third and long, and you're like, oh, well, all right, I got one more shot at this, so I'm going to have to punt the ball away. And it just seems like a wasted opportunity. This seems like wasted time for Rick. This also seems exceedingly dangerous, because they could keep him out of the rest of the battle. They could have walked up and killed him right there. And I don't see the value in the Heapsters compared to the value of Rick in the upcoming whatever they have planned next. So if they walked up and they just killed Rick, where was the upside of this plan? I just don't understand it.
Yeah, that's the problem I have, is there is the upside doesn't help them short term as much as the downside will harm them. So it really makes no sense. You know, I can see them, you know, finish off the saviors, then go deal with the Heapsters, but I don't see how they need them to finish off the saviors. Otherwise they should have gone to them, you know, early on in this whole thing, you know, bring an army down on them and then, you know, deal with it. But yeah, otherwise it just really makes no sense for what they need right now.
People who aren't leaders always know better. They're always pointing fingers at the guy. This leadership talk was brought to you by Gregory. Ryan, I mean, is he right? Does Heavy lie the crown? He's in the room with Margaret, but is she actually heeding his advice that the best way to go is to end this now and just build some gallows and be done with it?
I mean, you know, he's right that, you know, everybody kind of, as we are doing right now, Monday morning quarterback, and everybody, you know, it's hard when the one making decisions, it's way harder than, you know, kind of being on the sidelines saying what the person should have done. You know, I think Maggie is, as we know, she's kind of developed into a very strong leader, a very capable person. And I think she's working things through in her mind. And I think, you know, even as she says it, she has him there, you know, there's a reason why he's there, and it's not to be, you know, as he thinks, to be her counsel. But, you know, he is making some sense, but I just don't. It's a guy, a desperate guy trying to, you know, save his own ass rather than somebody who actually, you know, legitimately cares about, you know, the well-being of the entire group.
Rosita and Michonne bail, but they're still both on the mend. Tara and Daryl decide next to winning the war, killing Dwight is just a huge priority. I mean, have they all taken a page out of Carl's best-selling book, How Not to Stay in the Damn House? Did you understand the writing? Did any of it make sense? And are we just further pairing off secondary characters for less important storylines?
I don't know what they were thinking. And yeah, you're right. Stay in the damn house. Where, I mean, why is Dwight so important to these two? He's obviously done some things to help get them this quote unquote W. We got to just keep on the path. Don't worry about killing him now. I mean, because what if you need him? He's still inside entrenched pulling information and you're going to go try and kill him now. It just doesn't make any sense. And then Michonne and Rosita trying to go and do whatever they're going to go do. You know, they're both, one was shot. The other one had the shit kicked out of her. Relax for just another day or two. All right. Things are coming to a head.
She's like, it's been a day and a half and I just can't sit down. I mean, go heal. You were just beat by Ronda Rousey to a pulp. You're almost thrown off a building. Take a day or two and you know, mend the boo-boos a bit. I didn't understand this. I mean, Ryan, I get Tara's Denise issues with Dwight, but what are Daryl's issues exactly with Dwight? I mean, why does he need him dead right now? What's a few misplaced dog food sandwiches amongst friends?
He stole his vest. It's got to be the vest.
It's just more right. It's the writing that we need to fill time. So we need to put these secondary characters on some other, you know, journey or, you know, storyline in order to keep things going. That's what it felt like. You know, I didn't feel, because also we haven't seen any of Michonne or Rosita all season. So all of a sudden we get them and they're both like, you know, they're sick. They want to get out and they go out and they go on their own little adventure together. And then say, you know, same thing with Tara and Daryl. And it just, to me, they didn't earn that moment. It wasn't earned to me that, oh, I really believe that, you know, like, for example, when Sasha and Rosita went on their adventure, as whether or not you like them or like the characters or like the storyline, it at least felt earned. Like you felt like you knew why they both wanted to do what they did. Like that had been earned from the entire season, from Negan's actions. Like I knew why they went on their adventure, whether or not it made, you know, whether or not it was the right move or we liked the characters, we liked how it played out. That's a different story, but I believed it. For this one, I just didn't, it was like, oh, weird. Okay. They're just going to up and leave. And the other part is, again, it had been established that they're a couple of days from trying to end it. Why would you try to ruin the entire plan over a couple of days? It'd be different if this was 6 months out. It was like, all right, we just won our big victory. Now we all need to get together in a couple days and figure out what to do next. But it seems like they had a plan for what to do next. So to just kind of go out on your own and do this when they're so close to victory, just to me, it just seemed like, all right, we need to fill this episode with more stuff.
All right, I'm going to show my little inner cynic here, and I've really got a problem with what comes next, and it's going to screw up the timeline a little bit, but we're going to go through the whole thing. So, IG, somehow, The Walking Dead has more coincidences than it does walkers. Conveniently, Michonne stumble upon some saviors out of nowhere. They just happen to be discussing their evil plot to free Sanctuary, and they engage. Conveniently, Rosita loses her gun, yet finds an RPG and takes out the bad guy. And the biggest convenient ploy of them all, the lone savior that escaped somehow gets taken out by Daryl and Tara in a garbage truck out of nowhere with no indication how they conveniently got there just in time. IG, what in the entire fuck did we just watch here? What are they trying to pull? And were you slightly insulted conveniently on this turn of events?
Not slightly, more blatantly insulted. I was like, what the fuck is going on? There's no way. There's just no way that simply they run into a place and that place was stocked full of stuff too, that closely, that quickly after leaving the Alexandria, that they ran into a place that they hadn't found before with saviors building that fucking ghetto blaster truck. Oh my goodness. And everything. I think that the plot armor was so thick on that turn of events. It's like, there's no way. The only redeeming part of that whole part was Rosita shooting that guy with the RPG. That part was pretty awesome. I was like, oh shit. When he blew up, I was a little excited when she blew him up. She's like, oh, you wouldn't. And she just pulled the trigger. I was really excited.
Ryan, was this pot talk come to life or the writer's version of Take Your Kids to Work Day?
This is I gotta agree with Ig. I love the way he blew up. I think, again, as we talk about, the show does a great job every week. They catch me off guard with like some kill. Usually it's a zombie kill, but this week it's the exploding man with the RPG. That was great. Really well done. But yeah, like I always say, like, I get bothered by coincidences in TV shows. Like, I'll give every show or every episode like one coincidence, which is even more than they should get. But to have so many in such a short period of time, it just takes you out of it. I think that's the problem. I think that they, in order to make all this work, there needs to be maybe a little bit more heavy lifting done earlier on in the season to make a lot of this stuff, work out. Cause I understand what they're trying to get to, but it's just too many things going right at the same time. It was too convenient. And I knew it as soon as I saw the truck driving away. You could just tell the way it was framed that, yep, another truck's going to come out of nowhere and crash into it. And it was just like, come on, like you guys can do better than that. Cause they do better than that. So it's so up and down sometimes, the writing. And this is definitely one of the cases where it's just really not good.
IG Carl goes out and finds his friend Sadiq. They compare their I heart mom tattoos, and Carl goes into the old three question routine. Do you trust Sadiq? Is he trustworthy? And are you having a hard time believing that he's been wandering around for all these years and he knows nothing about these communities that Carl speaks of?
That seems a little far-fetched, that like he doesn't understand that there are communities if he's been out kind of since the beginning of this. As far as trusting him, I don't know. I mean, I really want to trust him. He just seems very genuine and likable, and maybe that's just his draw and he's able to do that and lure people in and then he kills them himself. I don't know, but something about him is just screaming, yeah, bring him inside. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's who they casted. Maybe it's how it's acted or how it's written. But something is calling to me about this guy that I do like him so far.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, rather than worry about eating or taking care of himself, he seems more intent on just killing walkers. He's taken out, 200 plus or near 300 by himself, yet he can't seem to find anything to eat. And he says that he's doing it for his mom. So that does make him seem a little trustworthy. I just don't like the timing of the meeting. If it would have been pre-everything that's happened, then that's fine. But, the Saviors have people everywhere, and they probably have somebody in Rick's camp. I just have a problem with him just taking a stranger in at this point in the story. Ryan, instead of gallows, they were constructing a big cage for our Savior guests, and they toss in Uncle Gregory with them. After 15 seconds, the always lovable Jared is trying to bust out and is talking about taking over Hilltop. At what point does Jesus' bad idea turn into a colossal mistake? And would you blame Maggie at any point for going the other way with her decision and just ending this as quick as possible?
No, I wouldn't blame her at all. Unfortunately, this, it's just the world that they live in. So I definitely wouldn't blame her. I see it. It's heading that way. I think that it will turn out to be a colossally, bad decision. I think you at a minimum, get rid of the really kind of insubordinate characters. Like, there are a couple guys in there that, yeah, you can get rid of them, because I think the rest may fall in line a little bit easier, but you've got a couple that are kind of assholes and don't seem to be towing their the Alexandria Hilltop line. So it might be best to get rid of a couple, maybe get rid of the entire group. I would not blame her at all for going back on a decision, because I just think that the risk, if there's a risk reward on this right now, it's a humongous risk for very not much reward, outside of them being grateful that they live. But I don't know how that in the greater scheme of things makes any real difference.
In a show of unity, Sadiq and Carl decide some tag team walker wrestling would be a great idea. And for a few brief seconds, it looks like Carl might get bit. With all the Chandlers leaving the show rumors, did you think Carl might be donezo?
I had that thought for a moment. I thought, oh, God, this is how they're going to kill him off. I'm glad they didn't. That would have been, to say the least, lame. It'd have been pretty poor for him to go off that way. It needs to be a little more epic for Carl if he's going to leave. That just, it didn't say it to me. But at the same time, I can't believe with as many walkers as Carl has killed that he got himself put into that position, you know? And that's the thing is Carl tends to do really well and then puts himself in a stupid position. And it happens all the time. And then somebody has to come and save Carl. Or Carl has to do something extra. And this time it was like, finally decide, all right, well, I'll pull the gun out and get myself out of this. It's like, if you were going to just shoot the gun to begin with, why didn't you just start there, dummy? But yeah, I'm glad he didn't die. But again, plot armor.
Carol finally gets her audience with the king, and she reminds him the masses that still need to be led. Okay, maybe the three dudes left at Hilltop still need him. And yet I smile. The broken king proclaims that it was just a role and he can't play it anymore. I mean, was that Carol crying we saw? What did you think of the acting between Kari Payton and Melissa McBride in that scene?
As usual, it was phenomenal. One of the best parts of the show. I think their relationship has been great since, I mean, really ever since kind of the shoe was on the other foot, and it was Ezekiel trying to console and get Carol back to her normal self. So I really love whenever they're, you know, they share kind of scenes together, you know, it's always great. So, you know, I thought he really plays it well. I think there's the cynic in me. It's kind of like, you know, great, here we get, you know, this is kind of a theme for the show is every main character, you know, kind of is a leader, then gets broken down, you know, to the point where they just don't want to do it anymore. And then they need another character to bring them back and show them that they're really needed and they're important. And then they go back and, you know, eventually, they either get eaten or they fall back into the same thing. So there's the cynic in me that is like, oh, this is just another version of that happening. But it's played so well, and he's so genuine and believable. And you know, I think it's unique in himself because he knows he's playing a role. It's not like he's taken on a role, you know, literally and figuratively. And so I think that's what makes it that much more interesting, is that she needs him to realize that it's not just a role. He is really a leader, but also that, yeah, but you got to start playing that role again. The people need you. So I really love the way that this scene plays out, and really, you know, definitely got the feels watching this.
IG, based off the interaction between the two, should the episode have been called The Short-Haired Psychotic Lady But Caring, The Widow and Rick? I mean, what does it take to put the king back together again? Maybe perhaps lay with Jadis?
Ooh. That might work, right? You know, we kidnap a garbage pail kid and bring her over to the kingdom. And that might work. Probably not, though. And she need a bath first. That's for sure. But I don't know. I think it's just going to be the same thing that King Ezekiel did to Carol, which is you have to just keep coming and showing that you care. And if Carol keeps coming and showing King Ezekiel that she cares, the king's coming back. I think that's all it's going to take.
Ryan, Daryl and company have a plan. Seattle's new favorite AM drive time radio show, Enid and Aaron, have a plan. Rick has a plan that no one seems to be following. And surprised to no one, he's now hostage of the trash people. Your thoughts on all these plans, the episode, and your rating?
So again, the episode, as usual, has got a good deal of filler. Which again is more of a problem of the season than it is the actual, you know, this episode. I actually enjoyed the episode. I liked that it was all over the place. I think for me, that works better for the show most of the times. I think when you're gonna, you know, there are times to have an episode where you stay focused on one character or one situation, but that should be, you know, the exception to the rule. So I like that it was kind of a little bit all over the place. We didn't get to see the saviors, but otherwise really it was all over the place. So I really, really enjoyed that part of it. I think, as usual, you know, there are just issues with the writing and kind of the show being all over the place, as far as, you know, people's motivations and whether characters are going to stick with the plan or go on their own. And I think in that way, it being all over the place is not a good thing. I think that there needs to be a little bit more of a central focus. And I think it does, just some of the characters' actions didn't make sense. So while I like kind of the way things play out on screen, it was kind of fun. Like the whole scene with Michonne and Rosita, that was a fun scene. It plays out really well. The underlying motivations behind everything is still something that bothers me about the writing with the show. So I think overall for this episode, I still think the good outweighed the bad, but still lots of filler. I'm going to give it a 7.5. It wasn't my favorite episode of the season, but it was definitely up there And I did enjoy it in spite of the issues that I found with it.
For me, this episode was a mixed bag of nuts. Some really great acting surrounded by the threat of a plan every 3 seconds and some really stupid character decisions. The small amount of action was kind of disjointed and sloppy. There was a lot about the show that I loved, like the opening, and some of the acting was amazing. And some of the rest of the episode downright insulted my intelligence. And that's unfortunate because I'm going to give this the lowest score I've ever given an episode, and I'm going to give it a 6.
I agree with you a lot there, Cynic. There was a lot of good and bad in this episode. I really enjoyed the story about Rosita and Michonne, but the circumstances by which they got there really bother me, and along with all the coincidence after coincidence after coincidence. It's just, it doesn't add up. I mean, nobody is that lucky to get that many things to happen in a row. And if you are, maybe they shouldn't be doing this. They ought to be trying to throw penicillin at walkers, because that's probably the cure. That being said, I did enjoy plenty of things, but there were too many problems in this episode. So I'm right there with Cynic, going to give this episode a 6. So Ryan's score is a little bit high. That's just fine. We're going to call this from The Walking Dead Underground, Season 8, Episode 6, The King, The Widow, and Rick. We're going to call it a 6.5. I'm your host, the Uncanny Igrahi. With me this week have been my co-hosts, your friendly neighborhood Cynic, and the incredible Ryan. We loved bringing this episode to you, and we had a lot of fun doing it. We can't wait to bring back next week with you. You never know what other surprises we're going to have. We've got some interviews coming up you're not going to want to miss. So go ahead and send us all of your questions and concerns to cynicradio@gmail.com. You can find the Walking Dead Underground podcast at cynicradio.com. That's cynicradio.com. Or you can go and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cynicradio. Or you can join the Walking Dead Underground fan site on Facebook. Just search for the Walking Dead Underground. It's a huge group and it's a lot of fun. You're not going to find a better place for Walking Dead memes, that's for sure. Also, look for us on Twitter @CynicRadio and on Instagram @CynicRadio. You can also go over to tpublic.com, search for Cynic, C-I-N-I-K, and get your own Walking Dead Underground gear. We got shirts, t-shirts, and all kinds of great posters and tapestries, coffee cups, phone cases, you name it, they've got it. Please, please support the show. And you know what? Share this. Listen, like, subscribe, give it to all of your friends and family. They want to know what's up just as much as you do. Thanks again, every single one of you. We love you all. We hope that you had a great holiday and looking forward to the holidays to come. And until next time, don't get captured.
Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and @TheWalkingDeadUnderground.com. Join us. Our fight against the saviors.
You'll leave when I say you leave, bitch.
Yay. Thanks for recording that so I can go at the end.